Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's a big season for the Two-Tone Blue.
We don't let the past do the talking.
It's time to break it all down with Chase McCabe and ESPN's Teron Davenport. This is Chase and TD.
It's time to go eat, baby.
On Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
All right, let's ride. Welcome in. It is Chase and TD, ESPN 102.5, The Game, all around the world on the Game Nashville app and thegamenashville.com. Good Friday evening, everyone. Chase McCabe alongside Teron Davenport of ESPN. He is the Titans NFL Nation reporter. Calvin Smith on the ones and twos. He does a lot of stuff here at ESPN 102.5, The Game. And I told you guys I was joking slash not joking that a lot of the things we're going to cover tonight, I've done a lot this week, which makes me even more ready to talk about it again because this has been a huge week for the Tennessee Titans. It's one of those that probably is going to go down in history because as of right now, the Marcus Mariota era at quarterback is over.
It is currently over. Mike Vrabel did say Ryan Tannehill is the starter for this week. We're going to get into that, but we're going to do some other things, too.
Yeah.
Let's make sure people understand this is a unique show. We're
sure
going to take a deep dive into what makes the Chargers defense good. We're going to look at the offense. But, yeah, I mean, obviously the main task at hand is Marcus Mariota being relegated to a backup role, and Ryan Tannehill is now the starter. And there's going to be some different things, so we'll get into that as well.
I'm going to give you my thoughts on all of this because we talked to you, Darren and I talked to you on Monday when you came in studio, and nothing had become official, just the fallout of the game. And so there was a lot of, you know, throwing things out there and debating and all of that. But this is the first time you and I have really gotten to talk since it all became official. And before we go back and, you know, talk about how we got here, I'm just going to say the biggest thing for me with Marcus Mariota is he's lost his confidence. And that's not all on him. I will say that time and time again. That is not all on him. But that's just what it is right now. He didn't have any protection up front, or they haven't been able to do what they need to do. So Ryan Tannehill's going to have to deal with that. I think he's got talent around him. The best talent that he's ever had. I understand all the coaching stuff. Sean Salisbury was on with us today and said that is so difficult for a quarterback to have to go through. But the bottom line is he's lost his confidence. Now, can he get it back? That's going to be the big question.
I think even bigger than the confidence is the trust. Right?
Sure.
That's really what it is. He's lost trust. And that's something that I asked Mike Vrabel about the quarterback fleeing the pocket. Because there were a few times where Mariota had a clean pocket. Mm-hmm. And a ghost flushed him out of it.
Yeah.
And Vrabel says specifically that's a trust issue. That's something that has happened from, you know, losing trust in what's going on up front. But then even further, it's a trust issue as far as when it comes to trusting everyone to be where they're supposed to be when they're supposed to be there. And that's something that you'll see on Sunday with Phillip Rivers. There are zero trust issues. He throws with the greatest anticipation possible, right? Because he trusts his guys going to get where he has to go. So for me, yeah, confidence is key, but you know, along with that confidence comes trust, right? And that's something that he has to be able to develop a little bit better. And it's just, I mean, I get it. The guy's been banged around for quite some time now. You know, this isn't just a this year issue, right? Yeah. This is something that has continuously happened to this man. So there are issues there that have to be solved. And I think for him, it's mainly trust.
Yeah, and look, I think a part of that with trust and confidence and everything that we're talking about, I think it can be fixed, but not here. I don't see it ever being the same here, and that's on both sides. It's just sometimes a fresh start is what you need.
Yeah.
And I believe that he probably gets that. I don't see them re-signing him, and I think they're going to move on. It's a long way to go in the season. A lot could happen between now and the end of the season. I understand that. But as of right now, I feel like it's just the era is coming to an end. Now, you were in Denver, so you saw it. We all watched it here. They could not get anything going. They got shut out 16-0. The defense once again did their job, held the opposing offense under 20 points, but then the Titans offense just couldn't get anything going.
Yeah, and that's the issue. The offense really couldn't get a thing going. Up front, you know, there were issues. Derek Wolfe, a guy who I said to watch out for.
Yep, you were spot on.
He pretty much held his own. There was a play where he was able to beat Nate Davis. And, you know, as a guy like Nate Davis, he has to be able to take his lumps on the fly, right? And I asked Vrabel about that. And, yeah, it's tough to really fully evaluate a guy who's, you know, into his third start, and he's really literally learning on the job. I actually asked Nate Davis about that. I pulled him aside and got to talk to him in the locker room. And he talked a little bit about that. Let's see what he had to say.
We're kind of in a rare situation where it's like you're on the job learning, you know what I mean, after being out so long. How are you taking to that process? Because it's almost like you have to take your lumps but keep progressing during games.
Just, you know, trusting the process. Obviously, it's going to be ups and downs with it, but just knowing that at the end of the day, it's putting the work, you know, trust the guys behind me, trust the coaches, and everything's going to work out.
Is it tough, like, to – I know you don't lose your confidence, but when a play happens, right? Like, is it tough to put that behind you and not carry it forward to the next
one? I mean, obviously, you want to do, you know, as best as possible every single play. So you just got to have a quick memory with it, you know, mess up the next play. You know, it's a long game. Everyone gets paid for a reason, so it got to be perfect.
What would you say is the most difficult part now that you're out there playing and you're learning on the job? What's the most difficult part of that?
I would say just learning, like, the little details of the game. You know, obviously, coming from college football, you can kind of overpower people and that's it.
Yeah.
Like, everyone's just as big as you. Everyone's just as fast as you. So you just got to learn little details, little things here and there to help you, you know, raise your game up. So I'm just trying to learn.
I remember when – like before the draft, I had talked to you. You were saying how you like to be able to get on the move and punish people that way. Is that something that this offense is giving you the chance to do?
Oh yeah, I mean, I can't complain at all. Our scheme, you know, it's awesome. It gives every single player a great opportunity to show who they really are. So yeah, I can't complain at all. All
right, cool. Thanks, man.
Appreciate it.
Nate Davis, Titans offensive lineman with Teron. I liked how you set that up of you're kind of on the job training, which is what he's had to do because he was hurt during training camp. And I may be in the minority here, but I'm not concerned about Nate Davis.
No, I don't think.
I know some people are.
Yeah, no.
I'm like, he's a third round pick. He missed training camp. It's literally on the job training. What are you expecting? And by the way, he's not getting a lot of help around, and the offensive line is just having issues altogether. So I just don't see the big concern with him.
No, I agree. I mean, did he get beat a few times?
Yeah.
Yes, definitely. He did. But for the most part, the guy has held his own, and I don't think he's the main issue, right? I think collectively it's an issue, but they have to get it together, and especially along the interior. And in this game, it's going to be really important with the pass rushers that you have coming from the outside, and we'll get into that a little bit later. But that's more or less what has happened to Marcus Mariota. He's stuck so many times with staring down a pass rush that's coming right up the middle. That interior leakage, it can't continue to happen.
Yeah.
Now, in this case, for Ryan Tannehill, but as it did in the past for Mariota.
So, you were there on Wednesday when all became official. And, you know, I made the comment several times on the air that I listen to Mike Vrabel and I see him and you can tell he hadn't slept. I mean, this has not been an easy week for him. This is a tough decision because everyone you talk to is like, you wanted it to work. And again, you never know what's going to happen in the next few weeks, but this is ultimately, he knows at 2-4 with the AFC the way it is, they still have a chance. They're still in it. They still have an opportunity. So you have to do what you can to try and win. And Ryan Tannehill is going to give them that chance.
Well, and that's the thing. You have to do what you can to try and win. And that's why he switched to Tannehill in that game because, quite frankly, the defense, they just keep holding things down, making this an opportunity for them to win games. Now, all of these three and outs and unsuccessful drives, turnovers in this last game, turnovers as a whole, they've been on the plus side of the turnover column. But It's just this defense is continuously put in a bad situation.
Yep.
And this is why you have guys like Kenny Vaccaro saying, you know, they have to be like the 85 Bears, the 2000 Ravens. They just continue to hold things down. And even at every level, right? You saw Jarrell Casey. There's actually a breakdown on the Titans team website where Coach Mack, Coach McGinnis, he broke down Jarrell Casey and Rashawn Evans playing a run. And it's an awesome breakdown. But it shows you how both the first two levels of the defense are playing really well. And then in addition to that, now you have Adoree Jackson. Now, this is the second game in a row where Adoree mm-hmm. played outstanding football.
Hey, and I tell you hear it right. You can hear this coming out of these speakers. Adoree Jackson, I see you.
Yeah, and I'll tell you this, you know, specifically, there was a tackle he had early in the game that was a good – it was actually the one where Rashawn Evans got hurt. It was – there is a different degree of aggression from Adoree Jackson that we're seeing, and that stood out to me. But then you cannot play the deep ball better than he did when they called the offensive pass interference on Courtland Sutton. That was an outstanding play, and even though Sutton pushed off, he still wasn't able to get the ball. Adoree Jackson is playing solid football.
I'm going to tell you somebody else that you don't need to mess with that I was glad to see come in because he had to because of injury, the Lumberjack, Wesley Woodyard.
Yeah.
That dude still has something, and he had something to prove. Comes in, and it's looking like it's probably going to be him again because Jayon Brown listed as doubtful for this week on the injury report. So looks like Woodyard is going to be the guy.
Yeah, Woodyard, he has six tackles, one sack. He definitely – and that's the thing. I love watching Woodyard, the energy that he plays with, and you could see how it kind of yields off to other guys. He's calling the plays, and you see his shoulders bumping as he's calling. You could tell, you know, and Wesley Woodyard, he's a lion, man.
But you know what? You've been around this game for a long time. He is a lion.
Yeah.
I agree with that. I think not using him as much early on in the season could bode well for them because that's somebody you're going to need down the stretch. You're going to need that experience.
Yeah, you're obviously going to need that experience. And, you know, in this case, Woodyard is he's getting a chance to play in spurts initially. But now, you know, he showed what he could do when he plays in the stretch. We already know what he could do, frankly. But, you know, the thing with Jayon Brown, and even like you look today, Brown had the groin injury. Today he was working on a side field with Coach Vrabel and one of the trainers, Brian Bell is his name. He's the assistant strength coach. But they were working together, and Cam Wake was over there too. So usually when a guy is working on that side field, it's not exactly likely he's going to play. We'll see what happens there.
He is Tron Davenport. I am Chase McCabe. We've got a lot to get into. We'll continue to talk about the quarterback stuff, the defense. But coming up next, Eric Williams covers the Chargers, the Titans' opponent for ESPN. He's going to join us on Chase and TD, ESPN 1025 The Game. The slow jams here tonight, Chase
That's
and
right.
TD.
ESPN. Yellow music.
Oh, yeah. I like it. ESPN 102.5 The Game, Chase McCabe, Tron Davenport. Let's say hello to Eric Williams. He covers the Chargers for ESPN. Eric, how are you?
Good. Good to hear a little Tony there.
You already know, man. You already know the West Coast flavor. You know, this is music you do something other than talk sports to, but you know.
Yeah. we'll leave that for another time.
So, Eric, I want to start with some things on the injury front. Russell Okung, he's not on the injury report. They have until Saturday, I guess, to make a decision on what they're going to do. Do you think he's going to play?
I think he got a shot. You know, during individuals, obviously we don't get to watch the entire practice, but during individuals, he was working with the first group. Individual work, if that means anything. But, you know, as Lynn said during his press conference today, it's hard to put him out there when he's only practiced for a day and a half. Now, he has been doing conditioning work with the training staff since the start of training camp, so his conditioning level or fitness level shouldn't be too bad. So maybe they put him out there just to get him a couple snaps and get him acclimated. You're right, though. They have until Saturday, 4 p.m., Eastern time to determine whether they're going to put him on the active roster or not. And they have a spot available because right now they're carrying two kickers.
So how important, with all the struggles that the Chargers have had to this point this year, to have somebody like that back from, you know, from a protection standpoint for Rivers, how big would that be for him?
It'd be huge. When Russell talked the other day, I think the happiest person in the locker room was Rivers. Rivers was kind of ribbing him during his interview with the media a couple of days ago. It just puts him at ease. You know, right now you have such an inexperienced offensive line. You lost your most veteran offensive line, your co-captain Mike Pouncey, with a neck injury for the year. So just having Russell Okung as a left tackle, blindside protector, come there and have Phillips back, literally a guy that's not going to move around anyway, I think would provide some comfort and make him a lot more comfortable inside the pocket. So if Okung could play and just give you 20, 30 snaps, I think that would be big for the Chargers.
While you have a plus possibly coming back for Phillip Rivers and Okung, mm-hmm. you have a negative now with Travis Benjamin going on IR. Now, in watching some of the games that I watched of the Chargers, it seemed like they use him like that jet motion, misdirection, you know, and work the opposite side of where he's motioning. How is his absence from that offense going to affect the Chargers, you know, offensively?
I think it's more significant than maybe fans understand. And Teron, you probably understand this as a guy that's played. The fact that you got to have a guy that's 4-2 out receiver out there on the edge, you have to respect that as a defense. And so he's able to create voids in the middle of the defense just by running go routes and getting guys kind of out of the picture. And the same thing with the jet motion, you have to respect that fly sweep, and it makes you defend the entire width of a defense. Mm-hmm. So I think it's pretty significant not having a guy that has that speed that can threaten the defense. Even though, you look at his numbers, I think he has 6 catches for 30 yards. It wasn't like he was putting up a bunch of production, but again, he was providing that deep threat. Really a guy that they're missing a lot that hasn't been talked about is Tyrell Williams, because he was a guy that could, again, take the top off the defense. He was a vertical threat. He worked well with Keenan in terms of their different skill sets. He could run over routes and shallow crosses and get across the field. You know, Mike Williams isn't Tyrell Williams because he doesn't have the kind of top end speed. Travis not being there is significant, but they have some other guys at the back end of the roster, like Jason Moore, Andre Patton, and they're going to count on those guys to fill the void.
Now, what about Hunter Henry? It's, you know, first game back, first play of the game, 19 yards. He's running that bend route, and they went to him. What does his presence in that offense mean for Phillip Rivers?
It's basically, I mean, he's not Antonio Gates, but it's kind of similar because Phillip is so comfortable throwing to tight ends. He's very comfortable throwing to Henry. They work together in the offseason back in Florida. And so with Hunter's there, maybe it can kind of ease the load off of Keenan, who's getting coverage rolled his way, and give Rivers a favorable matchup in the middle of the field. Hunter says he feels great. You know, even though he was out for a month with that dislocated kneecap, he said there wasn't a whole lot of pain involved. So he was able to keep, you know, kind of his fitness level up. Played a lot of snaps last week, and he's ready to go. And the thing about Hunter is he's a complete tight end. You know, he can run block. He can obviously get out and catch passes. And he adds a dimension to their offense in terms of the run game that they've been lacking as well.
Eric Williams, ESPN Chargers reporter, here with us on Chase and TD. And you can't Google the LA Chargers without something popping up saying that Melvin Gordon wants to run the football more, that he wants more carries. So is that going to happen? Is Anthony Lynn going to oblige Melvin Gordon and hand him the football more?
Man, we'll see. Melvin was killing me in the locker room today after I wrote that. He actually said that Anthony had a conversation with him after hearing about that story. I do think that they need to get Melvin involved, but not at the expense of being efficient and productive as an offense. And one of the concerns I had in watching them is the first 3 weeks, they didn't have any trouble moving the ball up and down the field. And it was their approach basically is we're going to use Austin Ekeler as a pass catcher out of the backfield, and we're going to have this pass-first mindset and then run off of that. And then once they got Melvin back, they kind of went back to how they played last year, which is a run-first approach and Philip kind of using play action. And they just weren't able to get enough runs early in the game. They fell behind. They turned it over. And then they had to start throwing it. And that's why Melvin's touches are down in terms of running the football. We'll see if they can stay in this game enough to where they can give Melvin enough touches in the running game where he can get into a rhythm and get going. But Anthony Lynn is a former running back. He's a guy that's always leaned on the running game wherever he's coached. And I think at his core, he wants to run the football. So I expect, you know, Gordon's touches to be up.
What is the reception of the locker room to Melvin Gordon after this whole thing? Because let's just be honest, he held out and it didn't work. So now he's back and trying to earn his money. What's been the reception like from Phillip Rivers and the rest of the room?
Well, you know, 53 guys in the locker room, you're going to have 53 different thought process on a guy like that and how he handled his business. It's never going to be the same. But I think the core guys, the foundational guys, did a good job of kind of keeping in touch with Melvin. Actually, guys like Keenan Allen were hanging out with Melvin low-key and with nobody really knowing about it while he had his holdout. Melvin actually stayed in San Diego. He has a place in San Diego, so he could get back and forth pretty easy. Costa Mesa is only an hour and a half drive from San Diego north. So he was hanging out with guys during that holdout and keeping in contact with guys like Mike Pouncey and Phillip Rivers. So I think that kind of eased the transition once he came back. So I think for the most part, people have kind of accepted him back in the locker room. A lot different, obviously, than what happened with Le'Veon Bell a year ago.
Can't forget about the defense, Eric. And a guy that we talked a lot about is Jerry Tillery. And he's obviously going to get to start with Mebane out. What have you seen from Tillery so far? I know he has 1.5 sacks. You know, that 6'7" guy, man. You know, I love his game. What have you seen from him so far?
You know, to be honest, his play has been uneven. I think you've seen flashes where he's been able to make plays and get after the football. But Gus Bradley, defense coordinator for the Chargers, actually said Tillery was one of the guys that struggled with gap integrity and why this defense has, you know, given up some big runs, and that's one of the things that he needs to work on. And his snap count hasn't been up there, and I think he's probably averaging about 15, 18 snaps a game. You're right, though. They're going to need him to play well on Sunday. He's going to start. Actually, both their defensive tackles are out. Justin Jones, their three-tech, has a shoulder injury and has been ruled out as well. Mebane's their nose. So Damian Square is going to play nose, and he's played in that role before and started games, so I think they feel comfortable with Damian. But they're not sure what they're going to get from Jerry as their three tech. So I'm interested to see how he plays, you know, getting a long run against the Titans on Sunday.
Let's talk a little bit about those safeties, right? And coming in, I thought Nasir Adderley was going to be a guy to come in and earn a starting spot. Man, that daggone Rayshon Jenkins, though. He's kind of a forgotten man, but that dude is a player, man. So what's going on with the safeties? Why has Rayshon Jenkins earned the opportunity to be a consistent starter?
Well, that started in off-season work and really started last year. Rayshon started a couple games last year. You know, they drafted Rayshon more as a strong safety. And so Rayshon came in the league about 225, 220. Yeah. But as they transitioned to free safety, because they never had anybody back there and they obviously wanted Derwin to play strong, he started flashing. You know, he's been with the team a couple of years, so he knows the defense well, and he started making plays. And now you've seen even more growth this year with all the offseason work, playing free safety the entire time and during training camp. And you're right, he's turned into a playmaker. What they like about him is not only is he an eraser in the pass game, can run sideline to sideline, but in that defense, because you play so much single high, they want you to be an eraser in the run game. You got to fill the alley and get to those running backs quick. And he does a great job of that. He's made a handful of touchdown-saving tackles where if he doesn't make that play, guys basically go into the house. So they like what he's doing there. In terms of Adderley, he can't get out of the cold tub. I mean, he's had a hamstring injury basically since the draft. And so he hasn't been able to get reps. And because of that, he's behind in terms of learning the playbook. He's actually not going to be available because of the hamstring injury that's been lingering. And he's been dealing with it basically again since, you know, he got drafted, because I think he injured a hamstring during his pro day. So that's the issue with Adderley. When he did play, I mean, you can see the playmaking ability. He actually played well in their final preseason game, but they just can't get him healthy enough so he can contribute.
Melvin Ingram, safe to assume he's going to be out as well?
he's doubtful. They're going to take a look at him again Saturday, and then I think they'll probably even work him up pregame. You know, he's a veteran. The guy knows his body pretty well. So if they feel comfortable enough where they can maybe get 20, 30 snaps out of him, there's a slight chance that he can play, but probably not. You're probably going to see Joey at one defensive end and Uchenna Nwosu, a second-round pick a couple years ago out of USC, replacing Ingram.
He's a player, too.
Yep.
Eric, we appreciate it as always, and we'll see you Sunday.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Eric. Thank you. Talk to you.
Yep, thanks, Teron. I'll see you this weekend.
Yes, sir.
Eric Williams, ESPN Chargers NFL Nation reporter, does a great job. Love talking to him. So
he knows his stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And appreciate him taking some time to come on with us tonight. So let's look at that offensive attack that Dean Pease is going to have to go against on Sunday when we come back. It's Chase and TD, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. I don't wish you no bad luck, baby. Don't wish you no strength. We'll talk to Emory Hunt coming up here in just a few minutes from Football Game Plan, get his thoughts on some of the, brace yourselves, quarterback prospects in the 2020 draft. We've avoided it, but now we can't. So now we have to talk about that to see who the Titans could look at, if that's the direction in which they're going to go. But first, the Chargers offense and what Dean Pease and the Titans defense are going to have to game plan against. When it's all working, when you have Phillip Rivers that's standing upright, and you mentioned Hunter Henry and how he's always, or Eric Williams brought up, that he's always liked having the tight end as an option.
Yeah.
And then the running attack with Melvin Gordon. When all that is working, the Chargers have a pretty good offense. And, oh, by the way, he's got some decent receivers to work with. Mike Williams, Keenan Allen. We know Benjamin is on IR, but he's got the weapons around him. It's just putting it all together. This sounds familiar.
I think the biggest thing to focus on is that combination of Keenan Allen and Phillip Rivers. And when you look at those two together, Mike Vrabel, Dean Pease, they both mentioned the same thing. And you can see it when you watch Chargers film. There are times where Phillip Rivers throws the ball and you're like, wow, what is he throwing it away? Where is he going with
right.
it? And the next thing you know, you see Keenan Allen lean to the outside, stick his outside foot in the ground, and go to that post, and he's running underneath the ball and it's a touchdown. Or you see him, you know, driving, planting and working his way back towards the sideline, and all of a sudden that ball that looked like he was throwing away is actually being thrown to a point. It's the trust that we talked about in the opening segment. And when you see those two together, I mean, Phillip Rivers, right, wrong, or indifferent, right? His delivery is disgusting, right? The shot
yeah.
put sidearm delivery.
But it works.
He throws with anticipation as well as anyone in the league. And when you pair that with a route surgeon like Keenan Allen, that puts a lot of trouble on defenses. And it's enough to keep defensive coordinators up late at night. Speaking of coordinators, I asked Dean Pease specifically about that combination. Here's what he had to say about that combination and some of the other options in the passing game.
Well, it's not only Keenan Allen, 86 and 30 and 81 and, you know, and Benjamin. I mean, they got really, really got a talented crew, but you know, 13 is really a special receiver. They're all good, but he's really a special receiver. And those two guys just, they got it going. I mean, they really work well together. He knows when he's going to break. Allen is one of those receivers that's unique in that he has a change of pace to him that's just different than other receivers. I mean, he, you know, he can stutter off the line and then burst on you. He can burst and then stutter. He changes pace all the time. I mean, there's receivers that are fast, there's receivers that are just good route runners. He's a combination of both. I don't know what his overall speed. It doesn't really matter. He gets open. And the thing of it is half the time the ball's already in the air when he makes his break. So those two work together as good as any tandem I've seen.
Titans defensive coordinator Dean Pease talking about that offense.
Yeah, and those guys specifically. And Keenan Allen's always been a really good player.
Yeah, he's fun to watch.
It's just so funny to me that he was, a third-round pick. I remember watching Cal, man, because you know what was on the other side of him the year he came out? You know what receiver was on the other side?
Uh-huh.
One of my favorite receivers to watch, Marvin Jones.
Oh, really?
The quarterback was actually Marvin Jones, his half-brother, Brad. was it Brad Maynard? It was something Maynard. But even coming out, he's always been an underrated but great receiver. And I think it's really good that he's starting to be talked up as one of the top guys, because he really is. I put him in top, and maybe even top five.
Right.
You know, but it's more than just Keenan Allen. You look at what they do with him. They move him across the formation, get him in different spots. But along with that, they take Mike Williams and they put him in different spots also. And you'll see Mike Williams sometimes, especially in the red zone. In the red zone, they do this a lot where they have him line up as a slot and run that slot fade. And Phillip Rivers will put it up there, give him a chance to go high point the football or what? Draw the pass interference. Yeah. Now you got the ball to 1 yard line. You got Melvin Gordon and Austin Eckler to punch it in. So they use him a lot, and they'll even run that fade, let him line up outside. You know, he's the X receiver for them. He gets on the ball, so he's a guy that typically runs the deep routes also, but they'll line him up outside and run the fade to him.
Would you say maybe outside of the Browns that of the offenses that the Titans have faced this year, this could be, I'm not going to say the most dangerous, but definitely it's going to be a test just because of what you have to respect Phillip Rivers and Keenan Allen and everybody we've just mentioned.
Yeah, Phillip Rivers is clearly better than Matt Ryan. I don't think that's a discussion. Yep. However, you look at that group, Austin Hooper, Calvin Ridley, Mohamed Sanu, and number 11, Julio Jones.
Right.
I think that was the biggest test offensively, period, for this team. Now, granted,
they're just not playing well.
They're not playing well, but I think that was the biggest test.
So, Melvin Gordon, I asked Eric Williams this question. Does Melvin Gordon get more carries? What do you think? Do you think that that's something that the Titans have to be prepared for, that now that Melvin Gordon has been back here for the last month or so, really early on in the season, that that's somebody that you have to respect, that's going to be dangerous, and they're going to have to shut him down?
Yeah, if you look at their total offense, they're averaging 368 yards per game. That's 14th. They're fourth in passing, 288 yards per game. 27th in rushing, 80.2 yards per game. Let me tell you something. Their head coach is a former running backs coach. Mm-hmm. I guarantee you, being 27th in rushing, it grinds his gears to no end. So I would say yes, when you have a premier back like Melvin Gordon that's continuing to work his way back after the long holdout, I would say yes, they're going to run the football more. And I know for a fact Anthony Lynn wants to increase that 80.2 yards per game that they're rushing with.
And Melvin's one of those running backs, too. The more you feed him, the more you get out of him. It's like Derrick Henry.
Yeah, and he's a guy, man, you get stuff flowing one direction, you let him put that foot in the ground and get upfield, he has that speed now. He gets to the second level, he's going to outrun some people. So they definitely have to make sure that they're flowing to the football with that guy running it.
I told you before the show that I was going to ask you a dumb question. Now, I lied. I'm actually going to ask you two.
Uh-oh.
And this one's not as dumb as the other one. But something to think about as we lead into the quarterback conversation with Emory Hunt here in just a second. Phillip Rivers is going to be a free agent. He's from a little over an hour and a half away in Alabama. Would that make sense at all? If he decided he was ready to leave Southern California and go somewhere else to kick the tires on bringing Phillip Rivers to Nashville, which has been, a rumor before, but at this point in time, would you consider it?
The Chargers already made a move that is punch in the faceable, right? And letting Drew Brees walk, and they went out, they braced themselves to do it, right?
Because
they're not going to let Rivers go.
They're
going money talks. And then on top of that, Rivers actually loves San Diego. I understand.
Yeah, he still lives there.
He loves San Diego. Have you guys seen the custom van he has, man?
No.
He has a van set up that he doesn't drive. He has someone drive. He gets his film study done. There's a bed and everything in the back of the van, TV so he can watch his film. He gets film study done. You talk about maximizing opportunities. That's Phillip Rivers. He loves San Diego. He refuses to move from San Diego to L.A. because he loves it so much there. I don't see him leaving, and I don't see Tom Telesco. He has a brain. He's a solid GM. I don't think they're going to let him do that, and they're going to give him all the money that they need to make sure that he remains with that lightning bolt on the side of his helmet.
I told you it was a dumb question.
It's not a dumb, because there's no such thing as a dumb question. There is no such thing. It's a question where you wanted to get my opinion on it. I gave it to you.
You did, and I appreciate that. We'll get the opinions of Emory Hunt from Football Game Plan. He'll tell us about some of the quarterback prospects that the Titans could be looking at. We'll do that next. Chase and TD, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. We're back, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Chase and TD, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Chase and TD, Chase McCabe, Teron Davenport. Calvin Smith behind the glass. Let's say hello to Emory Hunt from Football Game Plan. He's here to talk about some quarterback prospects. Emory, how are you?
I'm doing fine, man. I appreciate you guys having me on. The music is fantastic, by the way.
I appreciate it. I had something else queued up for you, you know what I mean? Like as if we were watching that Ricky and Boys the Men, or Boys in the Hood, you know what I mean? Just me and you, like we were watching Ricky run the rock, you know what I mean? But we'll bring just me and you on another segment. But, yeah, man, what's going on, man?
Nothing much, man. Getting ready for the Monmouth Gardner Webb broadcast tomorrow. I'll be the color analyst for that game down here in New Jersey at 1 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN3.
Very, very cool. So we're bringing you in because the Titans, it's looking like they're going to be drafting a quarterback in next year's draft. And there are several big names that everybody talks about. And one of the top quarterbacks in college football right now is someone that I watch and I ask myself, can he play at the next level? Can he be an NFL quarterback? And you're the perfect person to talk to. That's Joe Burrow from LSU. Do you think that Joe Burrow has the makeup to play at the next level?
I think so. When you look at what happened at Ohio State, having to wait his turn and then go into a fierce battle with Dwayne Haskins and to not win that battle, transfer, go down to LSU where quarterbacks go to die and thrive in that situation, to where now the passing game just highlights the fact that LSU has always had great receivers, great talent, and he has turned LSU into a national title contender with his play.
So with all that said, do you see him being a fit for the Tennessee Titans? Because assuming that there's not going to be any coaching changes or too many personnel changes.
I think so. He'll be a good fit for him. And you know, what you want is someone that's tough, that's able to make those tough decisions, that's not afraid of pressure. And to me, that aptly describes one Joe Burrow. It describes Jalen Hurts. It describes, you know, at least those two quarterbacks that you can trust and say, I know those two guys will show up game in, game out, no matter the situation, battle, and try to put their team in position to win.
I'm glad you mentioned Jalen Hurts, because I know we've talked about multiple quarterbacks, and your comparison of Jalen Hurts, Dak Prescott, I think is spot on. How could he come into this organization and be able to not only overcome the shortcomings there as far as being able to develop a quarterback, how can he come in and be an effective player?
Because he stays within himself. He's a guy that is truly in tune with who he is as a person, who he is as a football player. And when you have someone that's that laser-focused and that cognizant of what he can do and what he is, you're going to always be on the plus side of victories. And when you look at Jalen Hurts, how he handled that situation at Alabama, mm-hmm. going from a freshman phenom to where he led his team to a title game, would have got them a national championship if it wasn't for Deshaun Watson doing Deshaun Watson things at the end. And then to come back when his team needed him the most against Georgia, get them the victory, and then go off to Oklahoma and put up these ridiculous numbers where now he has Oklahoma in talks of, and actually advancing in the playoffs, something that they didn't do with both Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray, both of whom struggle with pressure a little bit. And we know Hurts is a guy that has ice water in his veins. So I'm excited to see what they can do once they get to the postseason.
Where would you project him? Where would the Titans have to pick him if they were to go that route?
Knowing how the NFL can get sometimes with the quarterback position, if the Titans finish somewhere at 13 or 15, they'll be right there in the picking for a guy like Jalen Hurts. We saw guys like Dak Prescott fall to the fourth round. We saw Deshaun Watson and Pat Mahomes go later in the first round, you know, underneath a guy like Mitch Trubisky, despite them two being the clear-cut better talent. We saw Lamar Jackson go 32nd overall, yeah. and all he's done is outproduce the 2018 class. So if the Titans are wherever they are, they're going to be in a great spot to pick Jalen Hurts, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, along those lines, right, you have a guy over there at Utah State. I remember we were at the Combine, and their OC pulled you aside and was talking to you. So I'm sure you have a different perspective when it comes to Jordan Love. Introduce the Nashville area to the Utah State quarterback who has plutonium-level potential.
Yeah, and you hit the nail on the head. The potential is there, and people have to be patient because, you know, he's still going to be a growing prospect if he comes out this year and whoever gets him whenever they draft him. He reminds me a lot, and people may see this as a knock, but I see it as a good compliment because I still think that guy was a really good prospect coming out of Notre Dame. He plays a lot like DeShone Kizer. We were at that game TV when they played Temple, and Kizer led that comeback against a top-10 Temple football team that had four NFL draft picks on that defense and threw that touchdown in the back of the end zone. So we saw the potential of Kizer. Kizer is a guy that he came out early and still had the development that needed to take place. He didn't get that in Cleveland. We'll see if he can get that in Oakland. I think Jordan Love is in the same boat. You love the potential. You love the physical tools. And you hope that someone takes him under his wing and is able to groom him into a guy that can, you know, tap that resource to where when he does get on the field, it's all consistency from there forward instead of the up and down that we saw Kizer go through in Cleveland.
Emory Hunt from Football Game Plan here with us. The Titans have been trying to get this right for a long time. They drafted Vince Young. That didn't work. Jake Locker, that didn't work. Marcus Mariota, it's appearing that's not going to be the long-term solution. So if they are, in fact, going to be drafting another quarterback in the first round or somewhere close to it, they have to get it right this time. So who would be that guy? If you had to pick one person, one quarterback that the Titans were to pick, who would it be?
Jalen Hurts. To me, he's fail-proof. When you look at a guy that can come in, that has played a lot of big games on the biggest of stage, held down that job for a while, and then was able to go through adversity, losing his starting job to a guy that everyone loves now in Tua Tagovailoa, and only to come back in that game ice cold and do exactly what you needed him to do to get the win, stayed on that team, didn't transfer, de-transferred after the season, got better while he wasn't playing, which is key. That shows you how serious he takes the position, and now you see what he's doing at Oklahoma. I want the guy that's not afraid of pressure. I want the guy that's not afraid of the moment, that's humble enough to where he can realize, okay, I do have to improve in certain areas, make those improvements, and when he gets his second opportunity, he takes it by storm. To me, he's the most pro-ready quarterback in the draft because we've seen him go through the highs, the lows, the biggest of games, and come out on top unscathed.
And I think along with that progression that he made as a passer is something that can't be overlooked. Initially, he was a guy that, you know, they had him run the ball a lot, mostly run the ball, but then he's gotten better and better as a passer. And you look at him in Oklahoma, he's doing his thing. So I agree with you there. And when you look at these prospects, right, Jalen Hurts, Jordan Love, I asked you specifically about them because those are guys that are going to just kind of get pushed to the wayside, right? And you already hear it. You see it in some of these mocks. Jake Fromm, Eason. What are your thoughts on those guys, and why are they not the one for the Titans in the first round?
Because it puts you right back into the situation that you're trying to leave. When you watch a quarterback out there on the field, let's say you hear names, and if you're not a trained scout or what have you, and you just hear these names and you just turn on the TV and watch these guys, you want to be wowed by, okay, I see why everyone is talking about them. And when you watch the Easons, the Fromms, the Herberts, those guys, you're like, you know, I mean, they're good, but they're not blowing me away. Your first mind never leads you wrong, and your eyes don't lie to you. A lot of people are more competent to do this as far as scouting is concerned than they are not. If something is telling you, like, you know, this guy is okay and he's not, you know, blowing me away, that's how you end up with a Mitch Trubisky. That's how you end up with a Jimmy Garoppolo. That's how you end up with those type of guys. And if you look at a guy that's constantly balling at a consistent level, at a high level, at the highest level, that's the guy that you want. You can't talk yourself out of good players because it may not aesthetically look the same. And think about it. We saw this with Dak Prescott at Mississippi State. When he was his first couple of years, he was essentially Tim Tebow. And then that final year, his senior season, the jump he made as a passer was tremendous. I remember that bowl game between him and Jacoby Brissett. I was like, man, this Prescott is quietly a good player. He goes to the Senior Bowl, wins MVP in a game that had Carson Wentz and Cody Kessler and all kind of guys that came with a lot of fanfare. Prescott was the best quarterback, and we are seeing now that he was the best QB in that draft class.
Emory, before we let you go, let's go back in time because you've evaluated talent for a while, and this is what you do. Are you surprised that things have turned out the way they have for Marcus Mariota? What was your evaluation of him coming out of Oregon?
I'm not surprised at all. I had a second-round grade on Marcus Mariota, and to me, he was a guy that you can win with but not win because of. He was, you know, I don't want to use the term because it seems – like a super knock, but he was the type of guy that you saw and was okay, cool. He has good athleticism. He can make a couple of throws, and if we can combine that with a lot of other elements around the team, we should be successful. And when you saw the one thing I had in my notes about him as a knock was how he handles pressure. And if you can handle pressure, to me that is huge in my book. That's why I had a first round grade on Winston and a second round grade on Mariota. Winston, it would drive you crazy, pull your hair out with the interceptions and some of the decisions he makes, but you know he's not afraid of pressure. And when you look at Mariota and what he was able to do at Oregon, he just felt like this team should have won multiple national championships. And in the biggest of games, he didn't come up big. And we see this a lot time and time again with a lot of these quarterbacks that don't really face pressure until they get to the NFL, Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray. And you want to see how those guys are able to adapt and adjust. And we just haven't seen Mariota adapt and adjust just yet, or maybe if at all.
And just to, before we let you go, just to kind of play off of your Jalen Hurts thing, right? You know, everybody made a big deal out of my video of A.J. Brown wearing number 8, Mariota, walking into a game. Well, during the preseason, before a game, you know what jersey he had on, right? That number 1, Oklahoma. So I naturally asked A.J. about that, and he said that when Hurts was at Alabama, he tried to get A.J. to go there. When A.J. was selected 51st, you know who was sitting there right with him? Jalen Hurts.
Really?
There's a connection.
That could be something.
Hey, that's what we do, man. We go deep. We're like sharks, man. We like sharks. We bring it all to you.
Hey, Emory, we appreciate it as always. Very good stuff.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate you.
My guy, appreciate you, man.
Emory Hunt, football game plan, and just, I mean, interesting because we've talked to a lot of people this week, and I know you have as well, just about Marcus Mariota and asking these questions, but this is what Emory does. So for him to say he's not surprised and that he had a second-round grade on him, I mean, it's we read a NFL.com scouting report from when Marcus was coming out, and everything has played out exactly how it said. So those types of things are just, it shows you should listen to these experts because they know what they're talking about.
Yeah, at times, I mean, I think you check the track record. For the most part, they know their deal, you know, so that's a good thing.
Jalen Hurts being the most pro-ready quarterback in the draft class, that's something to pay attention to. We'll dive into that, the quarterback and what they should do long-term, and also how we got to this point. When we come back, Chase and TD, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase and TD rolling right along ESPN 102.5 The Game. I am Chase McCabe. He is Teron Davenport. Calvin Smith behind the glass. Be sure to join us, Calvin and I, Sunday at 10 a.m. as we'll have the kickoff for you, getting ready for Titans and Chargers. But there has been a quarterback change. Ryan Tannehill will be under center for the Tennessee Titans. Marcus Mariota will be the backup. And as we start this conversation, because a lot to get into, you heard from Emory Hunt, Jalen Hurts, a high endorsement from Emory Hunt on Jalen Hurts as being the next Titans quarterback, which would be interesting. But what is going to be the biggest difference, Teron, between Ryan Tannehill being the starter and then what we've seen with Marcus Mariota?
Really, the biggest difference with Tannehill is going to be decisiveness as a quarterback. Tannehill is a guy who comes to the line of scrimmage with a plan. I'm not going to say he's more prepared than Marcus Mariota because I don't believe that, but he is someone who's more decisive as a passer. The ball comes out. That's the bottom line. It comes out quicker. He makes his mind up where he's going with the football, sometimes prematurely, and we'll get into that a little bit later when we talk about the passing defense against Tannehill in the next segment. But I think when you look at him, everything is more on schedule. He's a more on schedule quarterback. Some people have said that he's more of a pocket passer. I don't believe that. But it's easy to get into that mindset because of how on schedule he is. And when I say on schedule, it's if it's a three-step drop, it's three-step, it's coming out. If it's a five-step drop, it's five-step, and it's coming out. It's not five-step, hitch, look, hitch. No, it's scan the field quickly as you're dropping back and get the ball out. You're seeing what you're supposed to read quickly and finding where to go with the football. Now, that doesn't always lead to a good thing because sometimes a guy like Tannehill will see where he wants to go, commit to where he wants to go, and no matter what, he's going there. Guess what that could lead to? Interceptions. But I think just you're going to see opportunities for guys like A.J. Brown, who right now is one of the top yards after catch receivers in this league. Right, you're going to see guys like him getting more of a chance. You're going to see Corey Davis getting the football in space and getting a chance to make plays. Mike Herndon, a guy who is, he's a Titans fan, but he actually does a lot of analysis and reporting. He made an excellent point. You don't see too many opportunities where guys catch the ball in front of the sticks and get a in space and get a chance to turn and make a play. I think you're going to see that more with Ryan Tannehill as quarterback.
Well, and here's another receiver that I want to see get involved that I think could is Adam Humphries. And
yeah.
I know he commented on the differences between or how different it's going to be with Ryan Tannehill at the quarterback position.
You've been through it in Tampa. What's the biggest key to adjusting through a major quarterback change like this?
Biggest key, I really think it's just, you know, not just the guys on offense, but everyone on the team rallying behind, you know, whoever the guy is leading charge, just showing that we have confidence in him and we know he can get the job done. Sorry. I think that helps him, you know, coming in the huddle with confidence and you know, the ability to lead this team and knowing that, hey, you're our leader and we'll follow your lead. So let's ride.
So it's just basically just rallying around him. You're the guy. Let's ride.
Yeah, and we got to be on top of our game, too, you know, obviously, to help him out as much as possible.
Okay, so, cool. Appreciate you.
So clearly the biggest difference is going to be a guy with number 17 on instead of number 8. But I wanted to get that in there because having been through a major switch, right, you're going from Jameis Winston to Ryan Fitzpatrick. That's what he did in Tampa. And actually, they went back to Jameis, and that turned out to benefit him because it seemed like when Jameis is a quarterback, he tended to get more targets and his talent was a little more showcased. I think in this situation, going from Mariota to Tannehill, I think he's going to get more targets because it goes back to what we said about being on schedule and getting that ball out quicker. So the point that Humphries made that's so important is the fact that guys have to rally around him and make him feel like he is the leader. It's going to be difficult for some of these guys to do because we know that they are very close to Mariota. So I think that's going to be a major thing that they have to really show right away.
Well, it's definitely going to be interesting. And what you brought up about the whole being on schedule and going through the progressions, that's been one of the biggest knocks against Mariota, that he finds the first read and he's good, but it's going through the rest that he struggled. So does that change with Ryan Tannehill? Does he get the time and the protection that he needs from the offensive line to be able to do all that? Time will tell. We will see that on Sunday. So now we ask the question of what is next for Marcus Mariota. And before we get into that, you know, I know you've read the quotes. We had Rishard Matthews, former Titans wide receiver, on the midday show. And he had some, you know, and I know a lot of people hear him and they're like, well, he quit on the team and they don't want to hear what he has to say. He handled the situation wrong. He did quit. He left for whatever reason. But that doesn't make what he's saying necessarily untrue. And I thought his comments about Marcus Mariota were very honest. And he was on, and the first thing he said was, you can't be a silent leader.
He loves being a leader, but, you know, in high school and college, you can be that silent leader. But when you get in the league, like, you're around grown men. You got to demand greatness from grown men. They got to be able to, you know, see that every day and not just, you know, every now and then. And I think John and Vrabel and everybody and Arthur, you know, I think they're doing a great job at bringing guys in to do those, you know, to make it easy. But, you know, at the end of the day, the quarterback has to be a leader of the team. He has to be vocal. He can't be forced to be vocal, you know, and I think that's kind of what's hurt Marcus a little bit, you know, is having that chemistry.
I tell you what's interesting about that. When Tannehill spoke on Wednesday, he said specifically, now that he's not a backup and he's the mm-hmm. guy, he said he's going to be more vocal.
Right.
So it's really interesting that, and these are two completely isolated comments, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they're aligning perfectly.
But Rashard knows both quarterbacks. He's played yeah. with both.
He yeah.
played in Miami with Tannehill. So he know, and that's one thing that he went on to say in the interview, is that Tannehill demands greatness out of his players, and not that Marcus Mariota doesn't, but Ryan is much more vocal about it, and you're going to know when you're standing in the huddle what Ryan Tannehill expects. And so I thought that was very telling from Rashard Matthews of kind of the biggest difference between the two quarterbacks, and something that, you know, you and I have discussed before. I nobody knocks Marcus Mariota for being who he is.
No.
He is what he is. You can't force somebody to be that fiery, you know, just leader, rah-rah speech. I mean, Steve McNair was quiet, but you knew who was in charge.
Mm-hmm.
He just had a way about him of commanding that locker room. And Marcus, I think, is respected and people like him enough. But as Rashard Matthews goes on to say, that he felt there were times that no one could be real because of just how Marcus was and the type of personality that he had.
I find those comments to be interesting, though, because I personally don't necessarily agree with no one keeping it real about Mariota. Now, granted, Rashard Matthews is a little more inside of the locker room, clearly, than I am. But I don't know that I could agree with that. And then you see how guys really are supportive of Mariota. I'm curious what Matthews had to say with
that. Here you
go. Some people aren't, you know, they're not meant to do that, you know. And I'm not saying, like, Marcus isn't meant to do that. But, like, you know, I mean, he has that cool, calm, collective personality, you know, which is good. And there's nothing wrong against it. It's just he's so respected that nobody wants to keep it real. You know, everybody's afraid to be real with him. And, you know, sometimes I think people are forced in situations to kind of baby him along the way. But I think that it's just tough for people to be that real with such a respective, cool guy. I mean, he's cool. I mean, you know, you don't want nothing bad. But at the end of the day, you're in his business to win.
I don't know. I don't know. It's almost like, because you mentioned baby
mm-hmm.
and you mentioned not keeping it real with God. That makes me get the assumption. Now, this is an assumption, but that gives me the vibe that you're calling the guy soft. And I've never...
And I didn't take it that way.
I mean, that's the way I'm taking it.
When, that's
you,
fine.
When you say you baby somebody,
right?
Like anybody that needs to be babied, they are soft.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So anybody that you can't keep it real with is soft. So for me, that's how I take it. But in private conversations, on the record conversations, I've never, ever gotten that vibe from anyone that I've spoken to. So I'm not sure that I'm in line with those comments. But again, he was inside of that locker room. I'm talking about in meetings
yeah.
and those type of things. So it's something that you have to ponder.
I'll put it to you like this, because I relate things to real world stuff like me. I'm a very like easygoing and nice guy, and there have been times where people will have conversations with me that are tough and they want to tiptoe around it. Whereas I can take it, just tell it like it is. I would rather you do that. And so I think sometimes when you encounter a personality where we all agree Marcus Mariota is just a good guy, that you don't want to – you hold back. And so it's not so much that they're babying Marcus because it is – you know, Marcus can't take it. It's because they think that he can't.
Man, listen, man. This is a bottom line business. Every week you either win or you lose. You know what happens if you lose?
You out.
You gone. So for me, I don't really understand how you could say, okay, well, you know what? I don't know if this guy could take it, so I'm not going to critique. What? How about I don't know if my wife and children could take not me not having a job? I think that's probably the bigger picture. So for me, I don't agree with that, man. Like, you could tiptoe around a conversation, but when there's jobs on the line,
sure,
you don't tiptoe around it. And I think there is no being soft on a guy. I don't agree with that.
So you don't think it happened in any? He's been in three coaching staffs with Wisenhunt, Malarkey, and now with Vrabel. Now this coaching staff, I don't really see them being that way. I think Mike Vrabel is a results guy. Like, you're gonna get results. You're gonna play. We're here to win games. That's what I think. I think Ken Wisenhunt was fired because he couldn't keep Marcus protected. Okay, and then Malarkey was brought in and are kept in because he had a good relationship with the quarterback. That Marcus really liked him. He was a Marcus guy. So I don't know. But as you just said, because we're not in these meetings. You're in the locker room every day, but we're not in the same things that Rishard Matthews was. Now, I know some people, and Jim Wyatt, who I respect, was on with us today and said, listen, you have to also look at the source. This is a guy that quit on the team. I get all that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but at the same time, does he really just make something like that up? I don't know. That I'm asking the question.
Yeah, I don't know, but I know one thing. Marcus Mariota is now the backup quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's any more keeping it real with a guy than that.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, last time I checked, you know, you're keeping it real with somebody and you're not babying somebody when you take him and say, you know what? We came into this year thinking that you were going to be this, this, and this. You're not that right now, so guess what? We're going to Tannehill. I don't think that's babying him. So, I mean, I'm speaking for I'm speaking in regards to this coach and staff. They're not babying him, and they are keeping it real with that guy.
Well, I agree. I mean, I understand, but I thought it was telling stuff from Rishard Matthews. So, the Ryan Tannehill era, how will the Chargers defend against him? We will talk about the passing defense of the L.A. Chargers when we come back. Chase and TD, ESPN, 102.5 The Game.
We can do it. Just me and you, oh baby.
We're back, Chase and TD, ESPN 102.5, The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Chase McCabe, Teron Davenport, Calvin Smith on the ones and twos. So this passing defense that the Chargers are going to throw at now Ryan Tannehill, with everything that you just praised Ryan Tannehill about, of saying he's on schedule, and that he'll go through those progressions, get rid of the football, that's good stuff. Now, how can they throw him off with that pass defense?
Well, a guy that we've gone through this show and not talked about is one of the best players on the defense, specifically in the secondary, and that's Desmond King. And if you look at some of the things that they do with Desmond King, watch the Lions game. They sent him off the edge a couple times, very similar to what Dean Pease does with Logan Ryan. So he lines up in that nickel spot, and he'll come off the edge, and they'll show the blitz, right? And what do we say? Ryan Tannehill will make his mind up with where he's going with the football, and in some cases, no matter what happens, he's going there. Now, you get in a situation where you have a play called, you get to the line of scrimmage, and you see 20 start to inch up. And what ends up happening? The receiver, he's pointing to number 20, right? The receiver knows to do what? Go hot. The quarterback, he and the receiver, they're pointing at 20. They know, okay, it's built in. All right, you know what? We're going to go where he left. But what happens if he takes at the snap a couple steps forward and drops back into the passing lane? You have an interception.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if a quarterback makes his mind up where he's going and goes there no matter what. That's something that they could actually go to and be able to cause some issues. Now, additionally, it's unfortunate for the Chargers that Melvin Ingram is questionable, because there's another way that you could do that to where you have Desmond King show that blitz. He shows that blitz. And Melvin Ingram, he typically, and that's something to watch with these defenders, right, with the edge guys. Joey Bosa, he's always hand in the dirt. Melvin Ingram, for the most part, is a stand-up rusher, right? And Melvin Ingram tends to hug that defensive end's seat, basically. Right. Bosa tends to be a little bit wider. But Ingram, in that stand-up stance, it's easier for him to drop back into the passing lane. So what do? You show blitz, you make it clear, listen, 20 is coming. He's coming to take your lunch money, right? And while Tannehill is trying to throw where Desmond King left, you have Ingram dropping back into that lane. Now, they could also do that with Uchenna Nwosu, who's a very good player. He said, Wosu's a good player. You're going to see. Watch 42. He's a very active player. He's a guy that can rush the passer. He could play your true linebacking spot, you know, just as far as like a guy to work in space. You see him work covering tight ends from time to time. So he is someone else that you could drop back, and that's provided that Ingram isn't able to go. So those are two ways you kind of disrupt that quick release, that make my mind up where I'm going with the football. That's how you kind of disrupt that.
With the struggles that the offensive line have had to this point in the season, I mean, when Tannehill went in relief, he got sacked four times against the Denver Broncos. Joey Bosa, I think a lot of people know about him. You mentioned Ingram being doubtful, might be out. We heard Eric Williams talk about him earlier. But is that a concern for you, that the pass rush with, you know, that could get through that offensive line?
Yeah, I think it's the biggest concern is not allowing them to do something we talked about when we talked about the Falcons, the mm-hmm. tiered pass rush, right? We have that guy in the interior collapsing the pocket, not giving the quarterback an area to step up because you have the wide rusher. And that's one of the things to watch for. As I said, Joey Bosa typically is in a wide alignment, right? He's pretty wide. He's basically a yard, for the most part, outside of the tackle's outside shoulder. So he's coming from a pretty good angle.
Right.
Now, if that tackle, and they flip-flop sides, so it's going to be Taylor Lewan, it's going to be Jack Conklin, but if that tackle could get back in his drop, right, and just kind of club him and ride him upfield, Tannehill could step up in the pocket. But there's a problem there. Brandon Mebane is not – he's out.
Right.
They have a guy named Jerry Tillery who I think is a really good player. Now, I know Eric talked a little bit about him not maintaining gaps and run, you know, against the run. But one thing that he could do just simply by standing up is clog passing lanes. The guy's 6'6", basically 6'7". So another thing that he can do is get his hands up in the guard or in a center and drive him back. So there are a couple things that they have to do in order to stop that. And Nate Davis does a good job of just kind of sinking his anchor and just basically just being a doorstop. All right, it stops right here. But the other thing, like I said, if Tannehill is going to step up in the pocket because those wide guys are coming, that pass lane is clogged. So one of the things that they teach offensive linemen to do, especially against a guy like Tillery, who reminds me of DeForest Buckner with the 49ers, these tall guys, really simple, you check them in the stomach. Because that's automatically, right. Like, if you think about it, you got your hands up, somebody checks you. You can't punch him because then, you know, you get taken out of the game. But you could just give him a quick like that in the stomach. Automatically, you're going to put your hands down. Now that passing lane is opened up. So there are different things that they have to do in order to be able to play against this tier pass rusher that I think that the Chargers are going to bring.
Tannehill has been the starter in practice all week, but we all know how important timing and everything is between a quarterback and a receiver. Is that a concern for you at all, that just they haven't had a lot of time together since he's been named the starter?
I think it is something to be concerned about. It definitely is. And, I mean, there's no way to speed that up.
Yeah,
right?
And I mean, that
there's
just...
no way to speed it. I joked on the Talking with TD podcast. I joked. I said, you know, because AJ Brown, right? He said that the quarterback receiver developing that relationship is like developing a relationship with your girlfriend.
Right.
You got to spend time with her. Well, they haven't been able to spend a lot of time together, right? So
yeah.
You know what they got to do. They got a speed date, man. You have to rush things and get that relationship developed on, fast pace.
It's something that I definitely wonder about, but we'll see. We'll see how it all works out with Ryan Tannehill at quarterback. He's Teron Davenport. I am Chase McKay. When we come back, could there be a player in the lineup for the Tennessee Titans on Sunday that helps them make that defense even better? We'll discuss that next. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here, Chase and TD, ESPN 102.5 The Game on thegamenashville.com. Chase McCabe, Teron Davenport hanging out, Calvin Smith. You can join Calvin and I Sunday at 10 a.m. We'll get things started with the kickoff, followed by the NFL pregame show as we get you ready for Chargers and the Titans. Now, TD, a young man that everybody has been excited to see return to practice this week for the Tennessee Titans, or started practice this week with the Tennessee Titans, that is first-round pick Jeffrey Simmons. And there's a chance that he's in the lineup and could play on Sunday. Now, they would have to make a roster move to allow that to happen. So I start with this. Should he play?
No, without a doubt, he should not play.
I tend to agree.
You heard what Eric Williams said about Russell Okung, a guy who's played in this league already,
yeah,
who has achieved Pro Bowls in this league already. After, okay, yeah, that's great. Two practices, he practiced. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, no, you don't put him out there this early. I don't feel that that's something that you should do.
Now, from a timeline standpoint, they have how long until they have to do something with him, because he was considered non-football injury because it was during, you know, his training before the draft that he got hurt. So there's different rules, I guess.
Yeah, I want to say they have 21 days, but I'm not sure exactly what that rule is.
But it doesn't have to be tomorrow, is what you're saying.
No, not at all. It doesn't have to be tomorrow. And they would have to make a roster move, and you know, there's a lot that they have to do.
Yeah.
So that would mean they have to release somebody. And there are some things they have to do before he would be able to play. I don't think that is something that happens this week. But just to see him out there is actually a really good thing. And then to see him, you know, be able to move and cut and do some of the things. There's actually – I posted a minute of his work on Wednesday. You could see that on Twitter. I posted that where you could check that out, and he was doing different things that, you know, you do typically with a healthy knee. Now, he had that brace on it. He actually spoke today. He had us up against him. I was trying to wait because I wanted to do a one-on-one,
yeah,
but he came, you know, back into the locker room just before it was time for us to go. The guys down there at Titans PR were very nice and allowed us to speak to him. This is one of the things that he had to say in regards to how he feels.
A lot of stuff, you know, a little rushed here right now, but, you know, as the week went on, you know, my technique got better. You know, just taking the coaching, you know, that's what this game about. I've been able to take coaching and learn from it.
How are you feeling physically just as far as after putting your knee through it the last couple of days?
Like I said, I feel great. You know, one good thing about it, you know, I didn't have much swelling, so I'm able, you know, with my knee, you know, like I said earlier in the week, I knew I had an injury, and I'm not going out there being all timid, just playing football, and I went out there, you know, full force, and like I said, it felt great. It feels great today. So
there's Jeffrey Simmons talking about his injury and getting back and getting on the practice field. I say getting back to practice. I mean, this is the first time he's practiced with the team this week. I know he's been doing side work and all of that. Listen, I'm with you. Don't rush him back. I mean, I understand that, you know, he got hurt in February. So I guess he's healed up, but that's a pretty quick recovery for the knee injury that he had. And, you know, if he could use another week, if they evaluate tomorrow and they're like, you know what, let's give him another week, that's okay. This defense is playing well.
Yeah.
Now, he's going to help when he gets in there. He's not going to make a huge impact right away, but he's definitely, you put 98 on the field, you're going to have to respect him. You're going to have to do something with him. So I think it's going to be one of those situations like a Rashawn Evans last year that don't expect an immediate impact. It's going to take some time for him to get acclimated, not only to the Titan system, but the NFL.
Yeah, and that's that Rashawn Evans comparison, that's a great comparison, a great point, because even with Evans, you had a guy who's very talented, right? A guy who played a lot of football, you know, and did his thing, but it still took time at this level, you know, and he was behind because he hadn't been able to practice and spend a whole training camp. Same thing could be said for Simmons, so that's a good point. Jarrell Casey spoke about Simmons and having him back a little bit, and he was asked, you know, how excited he is. And he said he was excited to have a guy to come in there in the rotation. One of the things he made sure he mentioned was how Daquan Jones is playing.
Yeah.
And, again, Daquan has moved into that zero tech, and he's handled himself very well in that position. So, yeah, Simmons having him come in, just a guy who could rush the passer and be a disruptor and be a part of that rotation would be a good thing. I just don't think it's something that they absolutely need right now at this moment in order to risk.
Right. Let me ask you this. Let's say there are situations and it's at some point in the season, either this week or next week or whatever, that they put him in there. You know that the opposing team goes, all right, well, this kid, he's never played in an NFL game. He's coming off a big knee injury. We know that he's learning at this point. It's on-the-job training, similar to what we talked about with Nate Davis. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, because of what you know he can do and what he did at Mississippi State, if you're the opposing team, don't you have to respect that a little bit? And almost, if you're the Titans, he's somewhat of a decoy. Like, you can't just completely ignore him, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, here's the thing, man. Any man on that football field is not going to be completely ignored.
Right.
So I don't think that that's pretty much something to be overly concerned about. I don't know that Jeffrey Simmons at this point is a decoy. You know, as someone
and maybe that's the wrong way to put
or
it.
Or even just someone that will draw so much attention that another player will be able to get off and excel. I don't think that's the case at this point. Now, when you get the Jeffrey Simmons, the Mississippi
State, the guy you drafted,
top prospect Jeffrey Simmons,
right?
Yeah, he is going to be someone that's going to be enough of a disruptor that someone else is going to get off because of how much he got off to get to that point.
You know what? I'll tell you a funny story. So I was excited when they drafted him because I'm like, okay, this is a big dude that can make this team better. And so I think everybody was very, very intrigued, but they knew it was all tempered because they knew it was going to be a while because of the injury. Mm-hmm. We go down to SEC Media Days in Birmingham in July, and I am in Dan Mullen's press conference, the now Florida coach, and I'm sitting there listening to him talk about his team, and I decide, you know what, I'm going to ask him about Jeffrey Simmons. He obviously knows Jeffrey Simmons quite well from their time at Mississippi State. The moment the name Jeffrey Simmons left my mouth, I saw Dan Mullen light up like a Christmas tree. Like, he got fired up about a player he coached at his previous school and could not say, he was like, well, let me tell you, you know, if you cover him in Nashville, I mean, you got a great kid to deal with, for one. You got a leader in your locker room, and you have one hell of a football player that is going to get better and better and better as his career goes on. I mean, he kept going on and on and on about him. So I walk out of that, and I'm going, can we get this guy on the field? I'm ready to go. Let's see Jeffrey Simmons.
Yeah, without a doubt. And even before the draft, I developed a good relationship with Montez Sweat and his representatives. And I talked to Montez about Jeffrey. And even at the combine, I wanted my questions was about, you know, vouch for Jeffrey as a man and how much you guys were able to kind of work off each other. And he pretty much credited a lot of his success, his meaning Montez.
Yeah.
He credited a lot of his success to what Simmons was able to do inside as far as occupying so many blockers and just being a complete disruptor. So it's very clear, anyone that you talk to that has crossed paths or taken the field or coached Simmons, they give him a ringing endorsement. So that's a really good thing. And I'm sure this organization is itching to get that man on the football field. But I'm sure that they're playing it wisely so they can have him on the football field as much as possible.
I'm sure, you know, if Mike Vrabel walks into Dean P's office and they start talking about Simmons, they're like, you know, what do we need to do? What do you think? You think he's ready? You know, Dean P's can look at Vrabel and go, you know what? We've been good. Let's give the kid another week.
Yeah.
And then we'll work him in.
And that's, well, Dean Pease was asked, you know, if Simmons, you know, how much he thinks Simmons is going to play. And he said, man, we haven't even talked about him coming back yet.
Right.
So I think that kind of tells you where the team is right now.
Don't rush it. You don't have to. You are not. I mean, they got enough things they got to worry about right now. So
imagine, God forbid, he goes out there and somehow.
Right. Like, you don't want to see that. You don't want to see a setback. So I think you have to just take it one step at a time. And as cliche as it sounds, Calvin, trust the process. That's what you have to do. Chase and TD, when we come back, the Mac Daddy, and then what we're watching on offense and defense for both teams here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Who's the Mac Daddy?
Mac Daddy.
We're back, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe, Teron Davenport. We are Chase NTD, Calvin Smith behind the glass as well. Again, join us Sunday at 10 a.m. before, as we get you ready for Titans and Chargers. It's the kickoff, and then NFL pregame coming up at the George Jones on 2nd Avenue following that. Now, every week I have to pick the Mac Daddy, which I think was the best player, essentially, for the Titans this week. I'm going to be completely honest with both of you. This is very hard to do after last week's performance. So I'm going to be controversial. Ooh, I'm going to be a little controversial. And I'm going to tell you who the Mac Daddy is.
Uh-oh.
It's head coach Mike Vrabel for making a very tough decision and doing what he needed to do. That's who it is.
That's a very good Mac Daddy.
I applaud you for that one. I definitely applaud you for that one. That's a very good. And during the break, we sat here like, man, who the heck?
And then I said, you know what? I got.
Yeah,
one.
And it hit you. That's a really good one. And right, wrong, or indifferent, that decision. Whew,
listen,
man, it takes a set of those you know whats to be able to make a decision like that. I don't agree with it, but hey, listen.
Listen,
they say, what's the definition of insanity, right? Well, you can't accuse him of doing that now.
No, here's the deal. You and I, because we talked about this on Monday, you felt that Mariota should get another shot, give him a quarter at least. I disagreed. I thought it was time for a change, that it's year five. That's okay. You and I can have a difference in opinion on all of this.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, it doesn't matter what you and I think. It's the head coach. And he made a head coaching decision, and it's not an easy one. And you know what? It could come back and bite him in the you-know-what. It could be the wrong decision, but it could also save the season. That's why John Robinson, Amy Adams Strunk said, you know what? We trust you to make the decision. We're going to give you the keys to the castle. You're the head coach. And so that's what he has to do. And you know what? When they traded for Ryan Tannehill and he became the backup, I think everybody in the back of their mind thought, you know what? This might have to happen at some point. Mike Vrabel might have to make this decision at some point. After week six, that's what he's doing, and that's what he did.
Yeah, I mean, it was an insurance policy, right? And it was one not only against injury, it was one against play that wasn't satisfactory. That's really the bottom line. And, I mean, they feel like they have a team, a roster that's capable of contending.
Yep.
So they went out and they got a guy who they felt could come in and win a couple games if Mariota got hurt, but they also got a guy that, hey, listen, all right, I don't necessarily want you to be looking over your shoulder, but I want you to understand that we're not going to baby you, and we're going to keep it real with you. And by doing that, if you don't play well or to our standards, we got somebody else to put in there.
So before we get into what we're going to watch on offense and defense of both teams, I do want to ask you about this. The trade deadline is 10 days away or 11 days away. And there have been some rumors of Kenyon Drake and being a possibility that the Titans in Miami are talking. But let's play the what-if game. What if J-Rob gets a call asking about the quarterback that's currently sitting on the bench?
That sound you heard, like that buzzing sound, uh-huh. that was my spidey sense telling me that you were going to ask that question.
This was the other. I don't think it's a dumb question. I think it's a appropriate question.
My answer to that is, how about no?
Okay, because I heard you this morning, and this is why I'm bringing this up. So explain. They would if Marcus leaves free and clear. If he walks at the end of the season, the Titans get a compensatory pick, correct?
They are – the formula will work for them to get a compensatory pick, but it's going to depend on what they do free agency-wise also. And here's the thing. Remember, they have so many guys who have expiring contracts.
Right.
It's not going to just be Mariota that leaves.
Yeah.
So it's going to tilt in their favor, even if they do go out and sign a couple guys. Now, that being said, from what I understand, they would probably be in line for a third round pick,
right?
Which if Mariota leaves,
nobody's going to offer them a third round pick for Marcus Mariota
Thank
right
you.
Now.
Furthermore, they're 2-4. Okay, listen, they're not 0-4.
Yeah,
right. I know. I predicted 11-5, which you know what? Hey, my bad. Right, 10-6 was something that I know people felt that they was going to be in the wheelhouse, possibly. But the fact of the matter is, the season isn't over. There's still time. The Texans are 2 games ahead. They have 2 games against the Texans in December. There have been teams before that caught fire late in it. Look, the Titans last year caught fire late in the season, and they almost were able to win and get in to the big dance. So I think trading Mariota would be basically suicide on this season because –
I agree.
I understand Tannehill is the guy, but he's had his share of injuries.
You got to have a backup.
And then in addition, you got to have a backup. Logan Woodside is not around.
Yeah, no.
Right? Like he's around, but he's not on the field. So who
he's
ends
on,
up
like,
being the backup?
He's on practice squad IR, whatever that is.
Yeah, practice squad IR. So I don't see that move being one that they make. And then not only that, I don't really see how they would be able to get better
than – Yeah.
Then the third round pick that
you
they
might get
will
a fifth,
likely get.
Maybe.
Right. Don't do it.
Yeah. All right. Players to watch on offense for both sides. Let's start with the Tennessee Titans, and I'll let you lead off.
On offense, man, I'm going with Yak Daddy, AJ Brown. I think he's in line for a big game. We talked about it earlier, just being on schedule and getting those quick passes and taking advantage of the yards after the catch. I think he's going to get an opportunity to make plays. A.J. Brown is a very good receiver, making the most out of his targets. So I think he's going to continue to do that.
We're on the same wavelength with a new quarterback coming in. I want to see how that's going to affect the receiver. So I go Corey Davis being the quote-unquote top guy, top target for the Tennessee Titans. I want to see how he and Ryan Tannehill get on the same page early. I think that A.J. Brown and Corey Davis could have big days for the Tennessee Titans. On the other side, on the Chargers, who you got?
I'm staying on the receiver tip, and I'm going with Mike Williams. We know what Keenan Allen brings to the table. Mike Williams, he had a long touchdown against this team last year. I think that he is a guy that is going to get a lot of options, opportunities, with so much attention being focused on Keenan Allen. And we talked earlier about the slot fade in the red zone, and then just giving him opportunities to go up and catch the football. I think he's a guy to watch.
For me, it's somebody that's on my fantasy team, running back Melvin Gordon. Is he going to get what he wants? You heard Eric Williams that, had a little chat. Anthony Lynn had a little chat with Melvin Gordon that he wants the football more, but Anthony Lynn, having the running back background, you would think he's going to want to run the football a little bit more now that Melvin Gordon is – kind of in his zone. So I'm going to be watching him because I think he's going to be active doing a lot on the field on Sunday. Defense.
Defensively for the Titans, I'm going with Adoree Jackson. I want to see him continue to play more aggressively. I want to see him to continue to just play well. I want to see him stack good games, and that he's done that over the last couple weeks. So I want to see him do it this week. Mike Williams is a guy I mentioned as someone to watch. I think he's going to get matched up with him. He's going to get matched up with Keenan Allen. Got to step to the plate, and I want to see if he does.
One of the starting middle linebackers for the Titans, Jayon Brown, is listed as doubtful. So that means
going to Lumberjack.
I'm going with the Lumberjack. I am going with Wesley Woodyard, the old man, the seasoned vet, however you want to put it. I think he's going to be very, very important for the Titans on defense because he looks like he hasn't missed a beat. He came in last week, and I know he's had his moments. He's had his situations that they have put him in this year, but he hasn't been an every down player like we've seen in the past. But when he comes in, he makes an impact. So I'm watching Wesley Woodyard.
I like that. I like that a lot. Defensively for the Titans, or excuse me, for the Chargers, who are you going with?
I'm going Joey Bosa. I think you got to respect Joey Bosa and what he does on that defensive line with a new quarterback. I think it's somebody you got to watch out for.
Yeah.
That, you know, Ryan Tannehill having that time, and then you have a suspect offensive line, Joey Bosa, he could be hungry.
Joey Bosa has a move, a one-arm stab, and daggone it. He just takes that one arm and he shoots it out, and he uses that to drive offensive linemen back. I like that. Me personally, I'm going with Jerry Tillery. He's going to step up and get the start. The Chargers have 12 sacks. He has 1.5 of them in limited snaps. So I'm going with Jerry Tillery. Not only getting to the quarterback, I'm going with him being able to disrupt passing lanes with his height. He's the guy I would pick.
All right, as we wrap this up, I'll ask both of you. And Calvin, you and I will have a lot of time to talk about this Sunday morning. New quarterback, 2-4. You're at home. You're playing another team that's at 2-4 and that has had their struggles. How does this shake out for the Titans and the Chargers?
I will say the Titans only because the Chargers absolutely should win this game from every aspect, but give me the Chargers because this has a Titans win written all over it for no reason.
I hold in my hand, since 1999, every record of the Tennessee Titans. You know how many times that they have beaten the San Diego / LA Chargers?
I believe it's once.
It's once. They're like 1-11 since 98 or something like that.
That's pretty bad.
2013 with Jake Locker. However, I agree with you. I actually think they get it done on Sunday.
I'm glad you fixed that because I was going to ask you, like, how many teams on or players on those past teams are on this team?
Right, I understand.
But, I think the Chargers win this game, man. Honestly, I think the Chargers, and I think it comes down to the quarterbacks. And
how do you think Tannehill plays?
I think Tannehill gives you an 18 for 24, 18 out of 24, 220 yards, 2 touchdowns. That type of performance.
So with that, there's not a controversy on Monday?
I don't believe so. I don't believe there's a controversy on Monday, and I think they're going to continue to spin this thing forward with Tannehill.
I agree with you. He is Teron Davenport of ESPN. Great job as always. I know we'll be talking to you on Sunday. Calvin, I will see you at 10 a.m., not a bright and early. It's a 3:05 kickoff, so see you at 10 a.m. Talking with TD is going to be coming up next.
Coming up next. Don't go anywhere. And I have to get this in. My baby girl's birthday is tomorrow.
Aww.
Erica, I love you. I know you're coming to get me. Happy birthday tomorrow, baby.
Aww. And happy birthday.
I just earned myself some points. Cha-ching.
Yes, you did. Happy birthday. That's going to do it. Stick around. Talking with TD next. ESPN 102.5 The Game.